So why is it so hard for women to find things to love about themselves as they begin the aging process?
Well, it's a great question, but it's not just the aging process, but I think it really impacts women of our age because we are these cusp generation where we remember where women had no power and now women getting power and being able to have positions of leadership and professional careers and things outside of the home. But, you know, we're still very much stuck in the culture that's been present for 5,000 years, patriarchy. Right?
Hi, I'm Linus Woods Mullins, and I love to help women to vibe, to be more vibrant, intuitive, beautiful, and empowered in midlife. So come on, let's vibe. We happen to be recording this on the day of love, you know, Valentine's Day. But whatever time you might listen to this, I think what we're going to be talking about is relevant. And that is this whole idea of self-love. What is it? Is it possible? Is it important? Is it even relevant? I know some people talk about self-love and say it's overused. You know, of course, I love myself and all of that. But I wonder, because I have found with the women that I work with, especially those over 50, there seems to be some struggling with loving themselves as they are, you know, as they go through the aging process. So today I decided to ask an expert when it comes to the whole idea of working with women over 40 and over 50 in particular, when it comes to their dealing with their own self-value and love for themselves. I'm talking with Dr. Diane Garrison, who is a PhD licensed clinical psychologist, and she is also a feminine power coach and dream builder coach. She's the owner and clinical director of Lake County Wellness and Counseling, which is a holistic healing center in Wisconsin. She's been doing this for over 30 years and has helped in a variety of mental health issues and life adjustment issues, with a particular interest on the focus and needs of women, especially as they begin that aging process. So thank you so much, Dr. Diane Garrison, for joining us. It's wonderful to have you here today.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here, and I'm always excited about this topic.
Well, thank you. Well, it is a great topic because I think that as we go through midlife or whatever this is, I don't know. Am I in midlife at 67? I don't think so. I don't know where I am, but you know,
I'm still calling myself midlife.
Okay, well then I'll go ahead and grandfather myself in.
When we go into seniors, that's my new hallmark.
Okay, well then there you go, and I agree with you. You know, first of all, we are a society that's so preoccupied with labels, and everything has to go into a category, and that might be one of the first things that begins to start to rear its ugly head in our lives. Is what category do we fit in? Who are we now as we begin the aging process? And one of the first things that comes up, of course, is the changes in the way that we look and, you know, just the natural aging process. So why is it so hard for women to find things to love about themselves as they begin the aging process?
Well, it's a great question, but it's not just the aging process, but I think it really impacts women of our age because we are these cusp generation where we remember where women had no power and now women getting power and being able to have positions of leadership and professional careers and things outside of the home. But, you know, we're still very much stuck in the culture that's been present for 5,000 years, patriarchy, right? Where our value to society was in taking care of others, period. End. That's it. Taking care of others. And then we had all the religious training that told us that we are to be of service, and focusing on ourselves is selfish. And that's like the number one for women, right? So we really bought into or got brainwashed into that whole programming. So we feel our value in our caretaking to others versus I'm valuable because I exist and I have gifts and talents and beauty and things to share with the world. It's like all relationally focused. And so then, you know, then when you get the aging process, then it gets even and harder, right? Because we live in a culture that also venerates youth, right? Not these gray hairs you and I have, but youth, right? And all the images, my last podcast, in fact, at the beginning of February was on that cultural, the impossible cultural mirror of perfection that women can never reach and but torture themselves and spend all kinds of money to try to reach, rather than just focusing on, you know what, I'm here. That means I'm meant to be here. I got to figure out what my special genius, gift, talents, strengths are, and I'm going to share it with passion in the world. But we're not taught to that orientation, you know?
There's something you said that's very interesting, and that's just the whole enculturation of what goes on in our society. And I have found that it's just not the patriarchal society that has these expectations, but we begin to place these expectations on ourselves and each other. I had an experience the other day at the store, and this lady comes up to me and she says, "Oh, you are so beautiful. I love your hair." And I said, "Thank you." And then she said, "I bet you were really a beauty when you were younger." Okay. My second thought was, wow, she doesn't even realize what she's saying in terms of the idea that as you get older, you couldn't possibly be prettier because you're getting older. So when we take a look at some of these things that, the lies that we tell ourselves and the unloving things that we say to ourselves, even either wittingly or unwittingly, how can we begin to heal from this in a really meaningful and straightforward way? How can we begin to heal how we love ourselves?
Well, first is to understand that we're not wrong, we're not dumb, we're not broken. One, we have all this societal programming to, and the other is that we have a nervous system, a very nervous system that is negatively biased. So we develop that critical inner voice at a very young age. By the time we're 6 or 7 years old, we're already criticizing ourselves. And if we have nobody to activate or teach us the inner lover, the loving, affirming voice, then it doesn't exist. And then you learn about it later once you're older and you hear about positive self-talk and all about this stuff. But if you just spent, the early years of your life only being critical, then it's like retraining, right? Mm-hmm. But we're incredibly flexible and we have this huge brain, so we can always retrain. So I think, it's hard to do this without some kind of support, right? Whether it's a book or a program you sign up for or a coach or a therapist, because this ingrained belief systems go really deep. But what we want to really focus on are four kind of key components. One is to really learn how to identify and own your gifts, talents, and strengths, right? We're not taught to even focus on them. We, mm-hmm. Us in the coaching business, we talk about this stuff all the time, but for the average Joe and Josephine, they don't talk about what are my gifts, talents, and strengths, right? So you have to recognize them and you own them. And sometimes you need the help of somebody else to reflect them back to you because you're so used to not owning your own gifts, talents, and strengths. Then the next thing, we need to learn to start talking to ourselves in a positive, loving way.
Yes.
This positive self-talk. I call it inner mean girl versus the inner lover, right? And the inner lover is the one that's like, "You go, girl. You did really great. You look fabulous today," and practice that till it becomes natural. The third point is to learn self-compassion. It is ironic that women are masters of compassion. We show up for others. We know how to love. We know how to be empathic. We know how to be there, but we don't know how to do it for ourselves. So that's a skill that you need to learn. And that's why I wrote an ebook and give it to anybody who wants it about how to learn this very important skill of self-compassion. And then once you got those three components moving in and integrating, then you need to deal with the old baggage. You need to deal with the old stories, the old core beliefs that are keeping you stuck. And if you can do it as a wise woman with an inner lover, you can transform those stories to really match who you've developed over these many years. Who have I become? What are my gifts, talents, and strengths? What do I have to offer? Versus this old message of, "I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. I'm not important. I'm invisible." Right? There's a lot of them.
Yeah. And then the other message that I hear women talk about a lot about is, well, it's just too late. It's too late to change. You know, I've been doing it this way for 60 years or 50 years or whatever. I don't have enough time to change. I could possibly, you know, live in a different way. And of course, you and I know that that's not true. But right. How can we get women to understand that actually, in many ways, this is just the beginning. This is a great opportunity to be able to pursue things you've always wanted to, with the first step in changing in terms of how you view yourself.
Right. So it's, you know, and it's challenging. It's challenging to get women to really wrap their mind around the concept, I count and I matter and I'm worth the effort. And so we keep on offering these different programs and different Facebook groups. You and I each have one where we're trying to empower women with positive messages and, you know, meditations and opportunities and programs to help them really, you know, I count and I matter. Every Monday in my Facebook group, I do a self-affirmation Facebook Live, just, you know, 5-minute thing where it's like, here, take advantage of this. And I have, you know, a big group and maybe, you know, I get 20 views. You know, so it's like that question of how, you know, that has been in my mind for as long as I've been doing this. How do I get women to want this? Right. To recognize that they're worth it and to want it versus just going on doing the same old taking care of business and everybody else.
Right. It's interesting because I have learned that there is a great power in the testimony. And I've started sharing my story more, and I'm going to be sharing my story more and more on the podcast, in my group, and on TikTok, on Instagram, because they look at us and think, well, okay, you've already made it, or you don't have any of the problems that I have. Look at you. You know, look what you're doing. You're out there. You're talking to people. You've written books and all this kind of stuff. But the reality is, in terms of my story, it was out of my sickness that I came to do this. I had an anxiety disorder and a serious one. And I wanted to figure out how to deal with that anxiety without taking a pharmaceutical. So it was a journey. But I think the very, very first step was, first of all, to decide that I wanted to do something different. The first thing. Yeah. But then I began searching out and listening to other women who were going through the same thing, listening to their testimonies. You know, I think sometimes we need to get our stories out of us instead of hiding from ourselves and others and not letting people know what we're feeling, but actually talking about it. And you'd be surprised how many women out there are feeling the same way.
Absolutely. I share my story all over the place, you know, because I came to the work I'm doing now because I burnt out. Because I was trying to do it all and do it all perfectly, and I crashed and burned. And I really think that, you know, it was my early 50s, menopause was hitting, I wasn't sleeping well, I was achievement perfectionist junkie, and raising two girls, trying to keep a marriage together, trying to keep my own business together, a therapy practice, and I crashed and burned. And it was like, okay, either pick yourself up from the ashes, or like throw in the towel. Right? It was that bad. And
exactly.
I kept on receiving gifts. I first, you know, someone led me to, because traditional medicine was not helping me with the menopausal symptoms at all, found an integrative doctor who got me on some bioidenticals, and I started sleeping again. And that just changed the world. Then a friend gifted me a program on self-compassion. And I started learning how to love myself and learned how to meditate in a whole new way versus trying to like still my mind. That's impossible. I'm sorry. But go into my heart space. And then that blew my mind open. And then this just rolled out an email, a woman I'd been following for years, but I finally paid attention to her and her story. And that was Feminine Power and Dr. Claire Zammit, and got involved in that program. And it just like... steps of transformation that kept on coming and helping me to really, you know, I felt very guided to it in this healing process. And it's like, and if I, as stubborn and as stuck as I was, can heal, any woman. Yeah, I tell my story all over the place, Linus. You know, I was trained in graduate school to, you know, kind of keep that professional distance. And I found after I went through my own transformation and I kind of switched more into, you know, this transformational coaching style, and I wasn't cutting it anymore. And I found that my story could empower other women. You know, I am overeducated, overachieving, overly perfectionistic, trying to do everything right. But I got to tell you, once perimenopause and menopause hit, I was obviously so stressed out, so much cortisol in my body. I was hot flashing so badly in the night, I wasn't sleeping anymore. And then I got grumpy, then I got depressed. And, you know, it was like this trickle down, and it came to, you know, I either had to throw in the towel or I had to learn how to take care of myself in a whole different way. And that led me on this, I really feel like I was guided, led me on this journey. So first, a friend gifted me this program on self-compassion, and I'm like, okay. And I started listening to it, and it was life transformation. You know, even as an experienced psychologist, I had no idea. I had no idea how to be kind to myself, how to be gentle and compassionate. I did it for everybody else. But the fact that that inner critic really wasn't the best way to manage myself was like a revelation. And after I started being kind and gentle myself, then this feminine power program like fell in my lap. I was following the creator, Dr. Claire Zammit, for years and, you know, kind of paying attention, kind of not paying attention. And all of a sudden, no, I'm going to this free webinar and the rest is history. I got trained in that. And then I got trained in dream building with Mary Morrissey. And it's like my whole world just transformed, because not only did I feel much more connected to the all and to spirit, I was much more connected to myself and realized, well, there really isn't any difference between spirit and me and spirit and the all and connecting to others. And I found, you know, after being kind of a lone wolf my whole life, my childhood circumstances kind of demanded that. And, but I never got rid of it. And then finding a community of women, it was like so incredibly powerful, like-minded women who were always also trying to step into their power, trying to transform, trying to be them best selves. And, you know, so now I use my own story, you know, even though I was a psychologist, I didn't get it, to help other people go, okay, that we don't get it because we're brainwashed. Patriarchy, 5,000 years to not focus on ourselves, to not take care of ourselves, to take care of business and take care of everybody else. And
yes, you know, that's true. And, you know, telling our story is a form of self-love, actually, because you love yourself enough to be transparent. Yes. You know, and it's funny too, because you're saying, I'm a psychologist, I should have known to do this, but you know, it's that old adage, physician, heal thyself. You know, many things that we teach other people to do are some of the things that we struggle with ourselves. So when it comes to the whole idea of self-love, what are the qualities of self-love? What kinds of things should we be doing to enhance our self-love?
Well, when I guide women on this path, it's like multifaceted, and you know, there's not a wrong place or a right place to start. But I usually begin with helping them to identify their gifts, talents, and strengths. Like, you know, you're a badass. You really are. You don't think about it. Everybody else knows it, but own it. And then I start teaching them how to talk nicely to themselves. Like to tune in, you have an inner critic, right? And that voice is going all the time, whether you're asking for it or not. We don't, it's autopilot. But you have to learn how to activate your inner lover and learn how to talk really nicely to yourself and affirming and, you know, cheerleading and like, you can do this, right? They're like, you better not screw this up. I mean, what a difference. You can do this.
You can do this. And you know what? If you do screw it up, there's some key learnings in that. Oh, to prepare you for the next thing. Now, I can't say I'm so evolved that I thank God every day for my adversities, but I do think, I'm just not. I know you're supposed to, but I do thank God for teaching me in the way that he does the things that I need to learn to keep moving forward. And the only way I learn with my hard head is usually through adversity. And
you're so right.
Isn't it interesting how those situations keep showing up until you learn it? And yeah. So I love the way you can, I think we're more prone to have these aha moments about how life works as we get older.
Absolutely. The next thing I take women on is learning self-compassion. And by that, that's more than just talking nice to yourself. It's showing up for yourself when the chips are down, right? So when you have that adversity, that you are kind and tender and patient and forgiving with yourself for having a misstep or a flip up or whatever. So this concept of self-compassion, and it's not that hard to learn because we are finely trained in giving compassion to others. It's just a matter of turning the direction, right? From out here.
And kind of flipping the script or the mirror back on ourselves. That same compassion that you show your husband, your children, your friends, your coworkers, your parents, your neighbors, the people out in the street, all of that. Turn that whole way of being and treat yourself the same way. It seems like such a simple concept, but something I know we all struggle with, because with Absolutely. That comes that kind of like that guilt thing. Or
yeah, I'm being selfish.
Yeah, I'm so silly. To this day, and my kids have been gone from the home 12 years, almost 13 years. They're all successful, all doing well. But do you know, I still feel guilty if I'm just sitting and doing nothing. I feel like I got to be doing something. Because for years, I didn't sit and do nothing. I was always doing. While the kids were playing, I was doing laundry. I was cooking. I was prepping for the next day. I was helping with home. I was doing all this stuff, doing, and not being. And thank you for that Facebook message you sent me the other day, because that is so my language and we all need to be reminded. Talk to us about the value of being.
Being, well, we all have incredible wisdom within us. You can call it your inner wisdom. You can call it your inner guidance system. You can call it intuition. You can call it spirit. But we cannot really hear its messages or use its power unless we get quiet. And we can't get quiet if we're doing, right? And we're not human doers, we're human beings. And I no longer feel guilty sitting on my meditation cushion or just taking some time out, because I've learned over time that being quiet and creating quiet time every day is really what helps me be active and vibrant for the rest of the day. And so this really, you know, recognizing we are spiritual beings having a human experience, not humans who might or might not have a soul, right? We're human beings having a spiritual experience, a human experience. And this is just earth school. We may not really understand what happened before or what happens next, but we're here to learn, to love, to give our best out into the world. And, you know, but you can't get your direction, your passion, your true course, your North Star, unless you get quiet and quiet on a regular basis. I recommend it daily. And for me, it's at the beginning of the day. Other people like it at the end or bookmarking it. But for me, it's really at the beginning of the day. It sets the tone for the rest of my day to ground, to center, to meditate. And, you know, I teach that to others. And, you know, there's no one wrong way or right way to do any of this. You got it. In fact, you have to find your own way. I was always trying to, you know, match the gurus before until I figured out I'm my own guru. I got to find my own way.
You know, and as you're talking, I'm writing some things down that I want to make sure I emphasize when I'm talking to my community as well. You know, how you start your day can definitely determine how the rest of your day is going to go. Not to say that you can't do a reset, because you can do a reset. Yes. But sometimes it's hard to stop to do that reset. But I've been starting my day in a positive way for about 15 years. And it does very much the same thing like you do. I have my spiritual practice. I have my movement practice. I have certain things that I like to put in my body when I'm not intermittent fasting at the beginning of the day. And it's a ritual, but it's also a form of self-love for me and a form of self-compassion, self-care, self. That's what it's about.
But it's all about taking care of ourselves. That's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, for me, for years, it was all about everybody else and everything else. And I would come in as early as clients were willing to come in. And finally, I said, hey, you got your own practice, lady. You get to set your day you want. And that's when I started like, no. The beginning of the day is for me, is for exercise, is for quiet time, is for reflection time, for meditation. And when I set that in, you know, I don't come into the office till 10, but I get up at 6. So I have a lot of time to ease into my day in a way that fuels me so I can really be present for others.
Absolutely. Wow. I can talk to you forever, Dr. Diane. I so love your approach to your practice. And I know that you not just have the approach, you live that peace. And that's what makes it so powerful. And I want to make sure that people know to go ahead and tune in to your podcast, Full Power Women. It is an amazing podcast. I had the honor of being your guest not too long ago. And it was so much fun. In fact, I'm going to put in the show notes, everyone, how to get in touch with Dr. Diane. She is really not just an amazing individual, but she is a caring and compassionate person, and she's straightforward and honest. And it's hard to get that combination. It's hard to get that combination, but it is a powerful combination. And thank you so much for sharing with us your full power today.
No problem. And just a little correction. The podcast is actually called Find Your Fabulous with Dr. Diane, but it's my YouTube channel is Full Power Women.
Okay. And
so is YouTube my website.
Is Full Power Women. Let me keep you straight. YouTube is Full Power Women, and the YouTube channel is there. And also her Find Your Fabulous podcast, that link is there. It's all in the show page. I encourage you to go to her YouTube channel and subscribe and follow her podcast. You will only be better for it. Thank you so much, Dr. Diane.
You're so welcome.
Okay.